Coming up next in This Week in Computer Hardware, the HD 7950 Boost, NVIDIA's GeForce GTX 660 Ti and GTX 670 are reviewed. We've got balanced upgrades, what to do with stuttering hard drives, and will that $200 Surface leave Microsoft all by its lonesome? All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 182, recorded on August 16th, 2012, a festival of GPUs. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, the show where we try to bring you the most exciting and important news in computer hardware each and every week on the Twit Network. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by the man, the myth, the benchmarking fool himself, who's barely been home this week. He's been doing so much GPU testing. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Is this not home?
Look around you.
There's no bed.
Do you see your spouse? The answer
no.
No, you're not at home, dude. You're in the office. How long have you been in the office for, dude?
It's been a long time today. We had a big product launch this morning, and then we did a live review. Somebody from NVIDIA, Tom Peterson from NVIDIA, stopped by, and we did a hour and a half to 2 hour live event here for that as well. And then just had enough time to eat dinner, start collecting all these videos, start editing all this stuff, posting it, and then running in and creating some show notes for This Week in Computer Hardware, and ready to rock and roll this stuff.
Speaking of rocking and rolling, how fares the AMD Radeon HD 7950 3 GB Boost in your... Is it a rocker, a roller, or is it something we all just stare at and wait while it fades?
So this is interesting. This is a GPU heavy day in the hardware, by the way. If you haven't checked out the full lineup, Patrick, in the show notes, it turned out to be a GPU heavy week for us. The 7950 with Boost has an interesting kind of controversy going around it. And I'll be curious to get your kind of perspective in it if you haven't been privy to the discussion. The 7950 is a card that's been out for quite a while. I think since December or January, right? So it's been out a good length of time. We saw the release of the 7970 gigahertz edition 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, something like that. And that was the first product from AMD that integrated their iteration of Boost technology, the ability to kind of go over a base clock on a GPU, right? NVIDIA was the first to do it. AMD introduced it with the gigahertz edition in a kind of more simplified version, but it was there. Mm-hmm. But it was a completely new card. So what's interesting about this for the 7950, rather than create a whole new SKU, they didn't send out new cards. They sent reviewers and people in the media a BIOS that would allow you to upgrade your existing reference 7950 cards that they had already sent to people to cards that would support the new Boost functionality. It basically did two things to your specs. It raised the base clock from 800 to 850 megahertz, and it allowed the GPU to boost up to 925 megahertz. It also increased the memory frequency a little bit too. So what's kind of interesting about this, the interesting part about it in kind of light of everything is that people are kind of upset that there's a new BIOS release. People that already own 7950s, they're not being given this BIOS. You can access it. We actually posted it at PCPer.com, and a lot of other review sites have posted links to the BIOS if you want to update it or download it and try to update your system. But it's not officially supported by AMD. It's not officially supported by their add-in card partners. If you attempt to flash it and something should go horribly awry, you're voiding your warranty, just like with overclocking or anything like that to that degree, right? But there appears to be a lot of pushback on this side from the fact that it's got the same name, it's the same product. There's now people out there that have a card that they've been using for 1 month or 4 months or 5 months, whatever it is, and now the new people are going to be able to go out and buy a 7950 with Boost that has slightly higher clocks. And in my mind, there's not any difference to what this does compared to what any new GPU release, right? Anytime a price cut happens, anytime a new SKU is unveiled by either AMD or NVIDIA. So I don't really kind of understand what there's a lot of like negative press and feedback about it. I don't know if that kind of synopsis gives you any idea of what kind of stance you would take on the matter, but I'm curious, like, you know, if you had bought a 7950 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And AMD released this BIOS this week. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know what? We're not going to support it. If you want to get it from PCPro.com, you can do that. But, you know, you're kind of up on your own. We're going to sell a new SKU. It's going to be the exact same price. It's going to run higher clocks. You know, is this something where you would be upset that they had done this?
Angry. Yeah. Frustrated. Betrayed. I might consider never buying one of their products again. I don't see anybody being like, oh, you unlocked my part. You know what I mean? This is about the same. Remember the Intel chips where they're like, hey, we're going to sell you a chip inexpensively, and then later on you're going to buy a little card, like you were buying a Cabela's gift card at the right. You know, those end caps at the store, an Amazon card, an iTunes card for a gift, and that'll allow you to unlock the true clock speed of the chip you bought. You know what I mean? Sure. This is like the inverse of that, where they're like, you bought a faster chip, but we didn't give you access to all the speed, either because they released the part early or they, you know what I mean? This makes me feel like they throttled the part intentionally. You know what I mean?
I think, like, that's what some people are thinking, but in my view, this happens all of the time, right? Look at when NVIDIA released the 670, for example, or the 680, it had a frequency of 915 megahertz with, you know, a base frequency of 915 megahertz. That GPU is capable of going faster in most cases. But they're selling it, you know, they're taking a safety point of view. They're looking at it from a business stance. It's like, well, if we set the clock speed at 915, we expect to get this percentage yield. If we set it to 950, we could do it, but our yield would go down to this percentage. And, you know, do we want to do that? Is it worth it? Especially consider when the 7950 was released, there was like no competition. AMD, the 7970 and the 7950 came out, and they were the dominant cards in the market for 3 or 4 months, right? They were the new players in the field. They didn't have anything to really pressure them to increase their performance or increase their value very dramatically. NVIDIA was kind of depending on previous generation components for a while still. So I look at this more as, this happens every day in the world of PC hardware. You buy, we talk about all the time in the show, people ask questions, should I wait to buy or should I buy now? If you buy now, there's always going to be a chance that tomorrow something is better is going to be come out. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be faster. And in my view, this is all that happened. Something came out later that was cheaper, right, aka or the same price at faster speeds. So, and I think it's even kind of a plus that they have kind of as officially, unofficially as they could, release this BIOS out into the wild and said, hey, try this out. We can't guarantee it 100%, so we're not going to release it on our website. Our lawyers aren't going to let us do that. But the 7900 series of cards have great capability. They have a BIOS switch on the top, right? And one of them is read-only. So even if you flash it and you totally crap out the BIOS, you flip the switch back to position 2, and all of a sudden you're back to your original settings. So I almost consider this as like, hey, we are releasing a new SKU, but we're gonna as covertly as possible, as under the table as possible, like kind of leave you the option to see if you want to upgrade it. And I don't know. I guess I don't feel the same way that I would feel betrayed or upset, right? I don't know. It seems like this has happened so many times.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, I get exactly what you're saying. I think if they'd made it a more I feel like if it didn't sound so similar in terms of the naming structure, right, maybe.
If they had called it the 7960, would that have changed things?
Boom! That's a new part. That's new SKU. Yeah. I don't feel like I've been undercut on the part I already bought. But the 7950 with more oomph. I mean, yeah, on one hand, I get it, right? It's months later. It's a faster part. You know what I mean? Life has been sorted. Get used to it. On one hand, I completely grok that. But on the other hand, I'm like, really?
I would feel the same if they had released the 7960. Like, it's like, it's just another part. They're doing the exact same thing. It's all reactive to what NVIDIA is doing. And I totally get that side of things. I guess I didn't get, you know, there were a lot of people that were saying, you know, there was one particular article that I read, there's an editorial on it that said this was the lowest the hardware industry had ever been. And I was just like,
not even close.
It's like, how is that even remotely possible? Like this guy has just started this job 6 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, having been offered once $500,000 under the table for an early copy of a benchmark from Ziff Davis, believe me, this is not even remotely close to being that.
It's regardless of the controversy, I will tell you that the boost you get from the 7950 boost edition or whatever you want to call it is like on the order of 5 to 7%. It's not a huge jump. Right.
So basically what you're saying is if you have a 7950, find the firmware, run it on your card. If it doesn't work, flip the switch, get your original BIOS back. If it does work, you're getting a tiny boost, something that will barely be detectable in actual real-time gameplay. And nobody should get bent out of shape, least of all me, because I don't own a 7950. And just enjoy it, people. Enjoy the free gift from AMD that they're not going to give you directly because they want you to work for it. Because if it doesn't work for you, they don't want you to be really angry at them. This is reasonable.
Don't call them.
I apologize for my previous irritation with AMD, and I wish
I'm not trying to be an advocate for any particular stance necessarily. I just didn't understand kind of the view. Like, I guess when if you spend $450 of your own money, so remember the 7950 came out at $450. Now you could buy it for $350.
Right.
Are you mad then? Yes.
Absolutely. That's why I wait as long as possible before buying hardware. No,
but you expect it.
I think that the irritation is like, wait a minute. That card has the same number as the card I paid $500 for several months ago, and they're getting a boost for free. WTF AMD.
WTF. I don't know what that means.
WDTF. Let's. It's a family podcast. We should tackle what I'm about to say. Seriously, though, I understand why people get angry because, look, there's nothing more irritating than you know, buying something and seeing the price drop. And that's just the industry. But buying something and seeing the price drop and finding out the people buying it now get a little bit more. I can understand.
I get it.
It's the gaming community. How many thoughtful, kind, rational gamers really tweet and text and post
are out there?
Loudest, yeah. No, there's a lot of them out there. They just tend not to be the ones that have the 4,000 screeds of anger.
They're not on our comment threads going, this is totally acceptable. I guess.
You people don't understand what an unbelievably nice thing AMD has done. You insert name of reprehensible phrase here. NVIDIA GeForce GTX 660 Ti review day. You have been waiting eagerly for this card, sir. Are you thrilled? Are you excited? Was it difficult to pick up? The whole speed up your by 3x thing. Very exciting.
Yeah, so this was an interesting product. A lot of people have been expecting this. They you know, based on the naming structure, they just knew that this part was going to be coming out. What's interesting is that the specifications for the 660 Ti are almost identical to the 670. The 670 is 1,344 shader processors, 915 megahertz core clock, 2 gigs of memory running at 6 gigabits per second. That all stays the same for the 660 Ti. It's got same shaders, same clock speed, same memory capacity, same memory. The only major difference is the memory bus goes from 256 bits to 192 bits. And you might think, well, at least I thought kind of before I actually got to test everything, I was like, this should actually perform really closely to the 670. Well, as it turns out, that's not exactly the case. The performance delta between the 660 Ti and the 670 is about 15 to 20%.
Huh.
You know, a sizable jump. Not in every game, but in a lot of games. And the reason is the available memory bandwidth actually gets dropped quite a bit. You're going from 194 gigabytes per second to 144 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth. So you have a 35% drop in your memory bandwidth. So that's where that performance delta comes from, right? Is your, you know, texture-based gaming, when you get into higher resolutions, that's when you're going to start to see these kind of performance differences. It also has a $299 price tag, which it puts at $100 less than the 670. So NVIDIA's current lineup of cards that I think are decent in the 600 series is the 680 at $499, 670 at $399 and the 660 Ti at $299. Now you're starting to get down into the price points where a lot more people are going to be comfortable spending money on graphics cards. And it's still a great performer. It goes right up against two cards from AMD, the 7870 and the 7950. The 7870 is about $20 less, and the 7950 is $50 more. So it kind of fits right in between that. In my testing, the 660 Ti performs almost as well as the 7950. It wins a couple of places. It loses a couple of places. I would kind of consider it a tie. The general consensus is at 1080p resolutions or below, the 660 Ti is a little bit faster. Above that, if you're gaming at 2560 by 1440, you got one of those 27-inch Korean monitors or Eyefinity stuff, Eyefinity or NVIDIA Surround, the 7950 is a little bit faster. And that gets down to it has higher memory bandwidth. It has 3 gigs of memory instead of 2 gigs of memory. So my kind of rule of thumb at this point is if you're gaming at 1080p or lower, the Ti, the 660 Ti is a better option because not only is it getting you almost the same or slightly, just barely better performance, it's $50 less. And if you're gaming above that, you either want to look at the 7950 or the GTX 670 for those performance metrics or for those performance reasons.
660 Ti selling for what? $320 on Amazon, it looks like.
Newegg has quite a bit of them, quite a few of them for $299 or $309.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it looks like EVGA is cheaper than Gigabyte or MSI on that part.
Yeah. I think you'll find the EVGA, Galaxy, MSI, I think they each have like one stock, one overclocked type of setting. One of the other kind of value benefits of this is if anybody has been excited about Borderlands 2 coming out, I think it comes out next month. If you buy the 660 Ti, one of these approved vendors like Newegg and Tiger Direct and those guys, where most of the people will, you actually get a copy of Borderlands 2 free. So that's like a $50 bonus. You know, if this was a game you were interested in, you were probably going to pick up anyway. You know, if you've already pre-ordered it, you can go cancel your pre-order if you're going to buy one of these cards. And, you know, it sounds kind of cliche, but now you can take that $300 video card and take about $50 off of it, and it becomes a great value if you were going to buy Borderlands 2 anyway. If you weren't, then it's considered as an extra. But, you know, game pack-ins mean a lot when prices are very close, especially if they're – this is a very high-profile game, it was a multi-million seller for the first iteration of it.
Who ends up paying the cost of those games? I mean, is the card manufacturer eating the cost of that? Is the game manufacturer eating the cost of that? I mean, whenever I think, you know, you see a free game, I'm wondering why they don't take the cost of that game off the cost of the card. I mean, who's paying for it?
So the reason they can do that is a little bit of everybody pays for it. So my guess is EVGA and MSI and Galaxy, they pay a portion of it. NVIDIA pays a portion of it. And the Borderlands developers are responsible for a portion of it. Because one of the other things is that on NVIDIA's side, they've released videos, they're going to do advertising campaign, and it's going to be featured around Borderlands 2. So, you know, it's kind of like a co-marketing campaign between NVIDIA and the game developer, right? You let us use Borderlands as a pack-in, we promote Borderlands all over the place, right? So people are seeing it and they want to play it and that kind of stuff. My guess is they're getting a bulk discount. So maybe they're only paying $20 for a copy of a game for each card or something like that. You know, and if it gets split 50-50 between AIC, the add-in card guy, and the NVIDIA, you know, that's probably where most of that comes in. It's a long-term partnership type deal that they work out. But it's not like when this deal ends, all of a sudden the cards are going to be $50 less expensive or anything like that, you know? So take it, get the bonus while you can, I guess. Yeah. They got some interesting stuff in there. They got integrated like physics type thing, which, you know, some people love it. Some people think it's not worth worrying about. Either way, it's a promotional tool and they are allowed to get free. You get a free copy of the game. So that is a plus. We got 4 of the retail cards in, MSI, Palette, Galaxy, EVGA. We're going to do a roundup of all 4 of those. They're actually being tested right now. Look at the kind of how the coolers work, how the noise works, how the overclocking works, all that kind of stuff. And nice. We'll have a roundup hopefully for that early next week.
And our cavalcade of GPUs continues, ladies and gentlemen, with the Galaxy GeForce GTX 670 GC, a 4 gigabytes graphics card review by, yes, ladies and gentlemen, the man that has not left the office in days except to sleep, Mr. Ryan Shrout. Overclocked, 4 gigabytes. What's the premium and in terms of what you're paying for these glorious 1,344 CUDA cores, two fans, two slots, and four outputs? And, ladies and gentlemen, how much is it going to benefit me in the benchmarks?
So it's a 4 gig card. The general, the reference is 2 gigs. So you're getting double the memory capacity. This is only going to be important to you if you're a spec freak, right? You just want to make sure everybody knows you have a 4 gigabyte video card, or you're doing, you know, surround gaming, maybe 2560 by 1440.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. If you have a single monitor running at 1080p, you do not need this card. Let's make that clear. Unless you plan on buying like two more monitors in the none too distant future.
Yeah. So you don't want to use this at, if you're gaming at 1080p, this is a waste of money. Even though at $439, it's only like a $30 kind of increase over the other 670s on the market. And also, I just went to the Newegg page to check on the price, and it apparently also comes with a free Borderlands 2 coupon with purchase. So, you know, you get a little bonus there too. So the 670, it has, you know, it has 192 fewer shaders than the 680. It's a little bit overclocked as well. So we compared it to the 680, this card versus the 680. And at 2560 by 1600 and 5760 by 1080, you know, the NVIDIA surround resolutions, it comes very close to performing at the same level as the reference 680, which means, you know, this is about $70 less than a 680. So if you're going to game in those specific scenarios, this is going to be a good option for you. A little bit less expensive. You get a free copy of Borderlands 2, spec bragging rights, that type of thing.
These are good things.
Yeah.
So when we're, as we once again continue, the HD 7970, ladies and gentlemen, another card on my short list for cards I should buy if I didn't buy a new canoe. Oh, it was three. This is kind of sad. It was down to $360, and the link in the show notes has it back up at $430.
Oh, wait. No, there was a coupon code associated with it that I can't. Let me so this was a deal that we posted on PCPer.com. I don't know how long it's actually active for, but I figured I would mention it because the cheapest 7970 I could find on Newegg was like $429 or $439 even. And this one with the let me find the coupon code was for $60 off, I guess. Okay. So you could get this card for $360. So you could get a 7970 stock card for $360.
That's pretty good.
That's a pretty really awesome
deal. Yes,
it is. That's a significant thing, but it's one of those, it's going to be a limited time deal. So if you downloaded this and listen to it 4 days later, it's probably too late.
I think it's probably too late right now, unless you have the link to that card or the link.
I have the link to I'll put it in the show notes here for people that are actually listening live. It's actually from the logicbuy.com page, and it has like the coupon. It's like one of those kind of deals of the day sites type of thing. But it has a coupon code associated with it.
So it's up on buy.com or the deals on buy.com?
Logicbuy.com.
Logicbuy.
Yeah. Yeah. So somebody in there posted it too, and it's a good deal. It's one of those, like when we see the big sales on the SSDs that I typically will tweet out, it's like, hey, if you're looking for one, today's a good day to get one for 60 cents per gig type of thing. Same deal with this. Don't expect those prices to stick, but it lets you know, it's kind of indicative of the volatility of the GPU market right now, because so many things are coming out, so many things are changing prices, that if you just pause a little bit, you know, maybe you were kind of holding off. Maybe you're like, man, the 660 Ti looks good, but man, I can get a 7970 for $360 sold, you know, that type of thing. So
well, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm in you've completely lost me now, because I'm on logicbuy.com. I clicked on computers, clicked on the hard drives and SSD, and I'm like, wait a minute, what's that? OCC Agility 3, 240 gigabytes for $180, 120 gigabytes SATA 3,
you can get lost in there.
Agility 4 for $99.99. 3 terabyte expansion drives from Seagate for $110, which I think officially means the storm prices are over.
Yeah,
Intel
sounds that
330
way,
series, 120 gigabyte SATA SSD for $99.97. Oh, daddy's going shopping. My wife is going to be so pissed at you by the time I'm done with this. 180 gigabyte Intel 330. Yeah, like she can't find you on the internet. In any case, for those of you like me who did not know about logicbuy.com, you might want to go take a look. I'm a little afraid to find out if they have a monitor section because maybe they'll have a discount on a Cat Leap. So, in any case,
if they do, Microsoft, let me know that for sure.
I will let you know. Microsoft Surface, the rumor is the price for it is going to be $200. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what's going on. So $200 is the new black when it comes to pricing on tablets. The theory seems to be that the iPad kind of has the high end and the Kindle Fire, obviously a radical success. We've seen the Galaxy, says the Galaxy 7. There have been so many tablets in the last month. Nexus 7. Thank you.
There you go.
From basically Google's Nexus 7. And now the Microsoft Surface. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch PC vendors react to Microsoft selling the Surface tablets, especially if they do release at $200. I think, one, it'll be good for Windows tablets and the ARM platform on Windows or Windows on ARM. But I think it's going to be really interesting to watch how Microsoft's traditional hardware partners react to that.
Right.
And man, it's going to be really interesting. Great price. Hope there's a lot of applications out there. If you're thinking about buying an inexpensive tablet this fall, you know, and I haven't even mentioned, right, the rumors that there's going to be a, you know, 7-inch iPad are getting hotter and thicker and heavier along with the iPhone 5 rumors. We'll probably find more about that September 12th. The rumored shipping date on the iPhone 5, if you're thinking about buying a phone, is mid to late October, October 25th or something, right around Windows 8 launch. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with tablets between now and Christmas and if anybody has a real breakaway. Obviously, the Amazon bringing their ecosystem in, Google trying to control its ecosystem with Google Play. And when I say ecosystem, like all of the stuff you want to buy or play or watch on the tablet, man, it's going to be interesting to see.
Do you really think this is possible?
The Surface for $200?
Yeah.
From a reality-based, I build hardware for a living standpoint, or from
do you think they'll do it? Do you think they'll actually do that? I was going to say, I said no. And then Ken over here said, well, you know, the Nexus 7 has fairly similar hardware. It's not as good a screen. It's not as big a screen, but it has the same processor in it. It's a tablet. It has, you know, NAND flash in it. Maybe the Microsoft Surface would have a little bit more. And it sells for $200.
If it's not, I would not entirely... I believe it'll come out at... I wouldn't be surprised if it came out at $200. I don't know if that would be the smartest move on Microsoft's
part. It would piss off so many people.
I think it would really... I think all of Microsoft's partners would start really taking a strong look at it, whether or not they could encourage their customer base to use Linux instead of Windows, just out of spite.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, Jeremy Hellstrom wrote up the article up at PCPer.com, and it's a really... You know, the Surface is a really nice, you know, looking piece of hardware. The people I've known who have had their 30 seconds hands-on with it say it feels great. And usually feeling great means it's relatively expensive to build. The register's been all over that the rumors that it's going to be $199. Maybe it'll be $199 bundled with phone service, right? You know, maybe it's only part of the story. But
I guess that could be subsidized that way. Yeah.
Well, Here's the note. The register.co.uk, the article is called $199 Surface Tablets. It's listed from the PC Per article. Earlier this month, Acer CEO JT Wang urged Microsoft to, quote, think twice, unquote, before moving forward with the Surface strategy, saying, quote, it will create a huge negative impact for the ecosystem and other brands may take a negative reaction.
Don't steal our money.
Yeah, curiously enough, Wang specifically mentioned the $199 price point in comments to DigiTimes, saying that compared to a $499 to $599 sale price, launching the Surface at $199 would have a, quote, rather significant, unquote, negative impact on other vendors' product lines. It's Neil McAllister Yeah, I who knows what craziness Ballmer is willing to bring to the world.
I think I said this last night. I think it's the right move for Microsoft as a company, like right. to push the Windows WinRT and you know their ecosystem. But I think it's if they want to keep this whole partner strategy, it's a horrible move, right? Apple has the ability to do this. They would never sell anything at a loss. But if they wanted to, they could because they control hardware and software. They don't have any of this conflict. Microsoft has a whole lot of conflict to deal with.
Yeah, and Microsoft's, I mean, with all due respect to the Office platform, to somebody else, so, you know, Windows and Office are the core sources of revenue. Windows bundled on PC, huge percentage of Microsoft's revenue. I think it's going to be a real interesting fall. And if we're really lucky, there'll be a lot of nice hardware available cheap. And if we're really lucky,
$200 sounds great.
Email us, ladies and gentlemen, Twitch at twit.tv is the email address. If you want to ask a question to Ryan and myself, or you can tweet at us at Trout or at Patrick Norton, us being all kinds of web 1.0 and simple, our names. We got an email from Jake about music stuttering on a new rig. He says, "Hey guys, love the show. I listen while I run. I recently built a new desktop computer largely as a result of listening to your podcast. We're glad to help you out with that, and we apologize for any damage you did to your bank account." Jake says it's rekindled his interest in desktop computer hardware. The rig contains the following hardware, which will probably seem familiar since it was largely picked off the oh-so-awesome PC Per hardware leaderboard. Oh-so-awesome. My insert in there. Intel Core i5-2500K and Asus P8-Z68VLE Mobo, 8 gigs of DDR3 1600 Patriot RAM, and Samsung 830, 256 gigabyte SSD, Western Digital 1.5 terabyte Caviar Green, SATA 3.0, Zotac GTX 560 Ti, Corsair 750 watt power supply, and NZXT mid tower. And Jake says he's running Windows 7 and trying to use iTunes for MP3 playback off the spinning media hard drive. Since my music collection is rather large, 265 gigabytes, and I find that if I have not been at the computer for a short time and I select a song at random to play, there is a couple second delay prior to initial playback, or the playback starts immediately and then halts seemingly to find the songs that has played all that was stored in RAM. Further, sometimes mid-playback, it will also halt. My question is this an artifact of iTunes, the size of my media collection, the media stored on a traditional spinning media drive, or is there a hardware issue there that I need to investigate further? Thanks for your time and reading this on the show. I think I've got about 3/4 of a terabyte of AAC audio, but that's and it's on a rotating media drive in the operating system. This is peculiar. This should not be happening. Like,
no.
I can almost buy into, like, okay, if you have some really aggressive power settings, maybe the drive, even if the drive was completely spun down and had to spin back up, you know, a couple of seconds before you launch an MP3 file or an AAC file or a LAC file or an Apple lossless file, that just shouldn't be happening with a Core i5 and 8 gigabytes of RAM. It's just, even your, no, this is not right. You do need to investigate further. Where would we start? Where would he start?
I have to look at the hard drive, right? So he's got 260 gigs. Obviously, it's being stored on the Western Digital Caviar Green. It's possible... the Caviar Greens have a habit of kind of parking their heads and doing things to lower power and lower that kind of and that in turn could cause hiccups when you're starting a song. What I don't understand is he says it will happen sometimes in the middle of a song where there'd be a 2-second pause. And when you get into that, that could really be almost anything. Here's what I would think. If this happens, if he notices any pauses in other applications, not music, obviously it's apparent when it's music because you get this constant stream of sound, goes out, comes back. But maybe sometimes when he's using Office or he's browsing the internet, he notices that the scroll wheel stops working for a couple of seconds and then it comes back. If that is the case, I would look at the SSD. I would look at how the operating system is running on that SSD. It might be that he imaged an older drive over to this SSD with Windows 7 rather than installing fresh. It's possible that the SSD has some issues Maybe it's having trouble doing some writes, and when it does that, it locks up the system to make sure it doesn't lose any data and then keeps going. But that's only a possibility if it's not just music that it's happening in. If it's just music, I would look at the Western Digital hard drive specifically.
I've heard that some people have had issues and reinstalling, you know, basically reinstalling the audio drivers for their PC
helps. Yeah.
You know, like they would play a few seconds and it would cut out.
If he plays any games, does that happen? You know, like, is it just, you know, you need to do a little troubleshooting. Is it audio only? Then go from there. Is it audio and kind of the whole system, but maybe you didn't think about relating the two before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. It looks like he's probably using onboard audio, so you can see if there's updated drivers for that. Yeah, that would be the only thing I could think software-wise.
Figured, make sure, you know, I mean, it's going to be SATA. It's going to be, you know, it's SATA. It's connected on the motherboard, you know. It's not in a peculiar RAID configuration. It's not over the network.
Right.
A lot of really simple things to eliminate for stuttering playback or slow playback should not be there. So I would also just for the fun of it, go through and make sure you have updated all of the drivers for your motherboard and that everything is properly configured on that. And that's one of the things, the first thing you do is like update everything. And if that, you know, update all of your drivers, including the ones you think have nothing to do with this, and then turn around and probably make sure, you know, there's no flash update for your SSD and flash, and, you know, run a flash update for your motherboard. Mm-hmm. And if that fails, you know, try moving, you know, a bunch of your files onto the SSD and then point iTunes to the SSD. Does that fix it? You know, reinstall, by the way, before you do that, reinstall iTunes just in case iTunes did something really weird.
Yeah. Yep.
And at that point, you might just want to wipe the hard drive and start all over again with your Windows installation and software installation, which is an incredible pain, but it can be enormously unbelievably weird and irritating how many times just, you know, wiping a system and reinstalling Windows drivers in your applications will magically fix things when technically you have exactly the same installation as you had before you wiped everything and reinstalled it.
Nobody believes in bit rot, but it's absolutely a thing. Like our streaming computer that we use, it's like this application keeps crashing and crashing and crashing. Okay, well, let's re-image it. Like, we took an image of after we had installed everything. Okay, it's working fine. 2 months later, it's crashing, it's crashing, it's crashing. What happened? I don't know, and I don't think anything. Re-image it, and stuff works again.
It's the most amazing. Yeah, I bit rot ticks me off. And, you know, while we're talking bit rot, you may as well go ahead and run defrag that drive just for fun. That would be really fun.
Not the SSD, but the hard drive.
Drive, yeah, defrag the hard drive, because it would be funny if you defrag the hard drive and everything. So before you start, update all of your drivers, defrag the hard drive, reinstall iTunes, and see.
Do all those things that people recommended in 1998 for PC troubleshooting too.
Isn't that so?
Have you tried turning it off and on again? How about an email from Charlie? Who he actually sent us an email last week, and apparently the question was kind of worded a little bit differently. He wanted to clarify. He says the summation is, if this is the guy that had the AMD 5450. He says, if I keep my old GPU, the AMD Radeon HD 5450, and upgrade my CPU, motherboard, and RAM to the mid-level PC hardware leaderboard specs, which was a Core i5 2500K and some other stuff, will I finally be able to play these more modern games like Skyrim, Lego Batman at 1080p? Or do I need to budget for a GPU upgrade as well? I'm trying to remember what his older hardware was. I believe it was like Athlon 2 type stuff. Which is older, longer in the tooth, all that kind of stuff. I do think he would have to. I think he should budget for a graphics card in that. I was having a discussion when Tom from NVIDIA was here, a really good debate kind of back and forth about, somebody asked, why is it that a GPU seems to take up more and more and more percentage of the total cost of my PC? And it's because it's the most important part if you're playing games, right? And he's asking specifically about playing Skyrim, Lego Batman 2, not as stressful, obviously, but, you know, games going forward as well. The GPU is the most important part. It's the part that's seeing the most change still in the industry. So, you know, you're getting a lot of iterations, a lot of performance increases. You don't see that. You don't see performance increases on motherboards. You don't really see it on system memory. You don't really see it on CPUs.
I mean, the graphics games, it's people don't realize that. People are like, oh, the CPU is the most complicated part in my machine. It's actually, no, if you're buying a modern GPU, the transistor count in the modern GPU kicks the snot out of the transistor count in a modern CPU.
Kepler is 3.5 billion transistors.
Billion. And there's what, 750 million in a Core i7?
I think if we go back to Sandy Bridge, it's under a billion. Yeah.
Under a billion. Right. So think about that. There are 3.5 times as many transistors. You know, Sandy Bridge Core i7 has like less than a third of the transistors as one of the latest GPUs. And, you know, the graphics on the game is so optimized and so brutal on your CPU. You need to upgrade your CPU and your GPU in lockstep. You need to keep them close. You need to keep things balanced in there. Because if you don't, you will fall behind. Charlie, you could upgrade your CPU motherboard and RAM to mid-level PC per hardware leaderboard specs and keep your old GPU. And if the performance is frustrating, then you know it's time to upgrade the GPU. And you can save your pennies and game with the 5450 for as long as possible. So just a thought there. One last question before we go.
Sure.
Should we talk about Steve? Should you take Steve or Charles?
I'm going to look and say, let's go Steve's in order.
Charles, we'll get to you next week. Yep. Steve writes, I have a Dell XPS 9100 loaded with dual 37-inch monitors. A big Black Ops fan. I need to know if I can swap an NVIDIA GTX 260 for a $300 NVIDIA GTX 660 Ti. I have a megawatt power supply, so is it as easy as I think? Your thoughts on the card itself and any concerns and advice. Love your show. Longtime fan, Steve in Tucson, Arizona. Thanks. Well, thank you, Steve.
I don't know what he means by megawatt power supply.
1,000 watts.
So we're thinking kilowatt. Okay. Kilowatt. Gotcha.
Big ass might be another alternative.
I don't know if that's... So the Dell XPS 9100 is a desktop. I was just kind of looking it up. It's an improved and updated desktop XPS system as you can buy from Dell, right? And I'm looking at the tech specs. And it's currently saying, does it say anything about the power supply? It's not really going to. It says 525 watts. So, but I don't know what year he has his.
Let's just for fun, let's assume it's a 500 watt power supply.
Okay.
Will he be safe? Can he run a 660 Ti and say a Core i5 with a 500 watt power supply?
Yeah. I think the power supply recommendation from NVIDIA. Actually, let me double check on that before I
I know
put that down. But I think it's only 450 watts, like the recommended power supply for this. And obviously, they're not talking about just the GPU; they're talking about a system based on this GPU. 450 watts recommended power supply. So if he has a 500 watt power supply, and the only thing I would be more particular about anytime you're upgrading one of these OEM systems is, does your power supply have the right connectors on it? Right. And do you have enough space for it? If he's upgrading from a 260, then I assume he has dual slots and he has 6-pin PCI Express power connections. So I think he should be fine. And ironically, this is the exact upgrade that was shown in our live stream when NVIDIA was here. If you go to the front page of that review, we talk about seeing if you go from a 260 to a 660 Ti, you're getting a 3.3x performance increase for graphics. So he is the standard by which they develop these products and these kind of presentations and stuff. So it's kind of interesting.
You're the standard.
You are the standard.
400 watt power supply, 500 watts or better, you are gold, Steve.
Yeah. So, yeah.
There you have it. Do us a favor. If you like the show, tell your friends about it. Email them or send them a link, twit.tv/Twitch. They can subscribe to us on iTunes, or if you want to, you can find the links at twit.tv/Twitch. Twitch at twit.tv. TWICH, I should point out. TWIT.tv/TWICH. There is no T in Twitch. place to find Ryan on the internets is PCPer.com. What excitement do you have in store for us at PCPer coming up? More GPU chance?
Of course. God, yes. So we have the roundup of the 660 Ti cards that we're finishing up right now. And we also have, what else do we have lined up over there? We've got, the Gigabyte Dual Thunderbolt motherboard that we're going to put through its paces as well. We still have quite a bit of Z77 stuff to touch on and review and that kind of stuff. So it will be GPU heavy. From everything I'm hearing, it's going to be a GPU heavy late summer, early fall. So keep subscribing, guys.
Techzilla at techzilla.com has been an interesting week because I am in the process of spending a week or doing my best running Debian on a Raspberry Pi as my primary desktop.
So we'll as your primary desktop, I'm impressed.
Well, I didn't say it was easy, but it, my primary desktop machine at work, I'm using to attempt to create the show, and I'll talk about more about that on Wednesday next week. Cool. And Tuesday, we have a whole bunch of stuff lined up that should involve actually no full frontal nudity. We will be fully clothed in Tuesday's episode of Techzilla, thankfully. That's a joke.
Is that
different
than your normal episodes?
No, we almost always wear clothes. Veronica, Ross, Patrick, all wearing clothes. Techzilla is a fully clothed television show.
I wasn't sure if I would add another subscription or cancel my existing one to the show if that had turned out to be the case. So
continue to wear clothes. And reliably on the show. No, it's been interesting actually covering some of the security stuff over the past couple of weeks. And we actually had a really interesting conversation on the last episode of Techzilla where somebody emailed in and they're like, how can I trust? Can I trust iCloud with my data? Who backs up iCloud? And we opened it up and said, look, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Carbonite or CrashPlan or Dropbox or Box.net or iCloud or any one of the 3,200 thousand other services out there. You know, and we talked about sort of, you know, redundant servers and parity data and, you know, enterprise grade storage and how it's kind of, you know, shouldn't be an issue unless it is. But the funny thing was talking about 3-2-1 rule of backup, and it amazed me how many people haven't heard the 3-2-1 rule of backing up. And if you haven't and you're worried about losing your data, and you should be, you should head on over to Techzilla to download.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the 3-2-1 backup rule, critical for taking personal responsibility for your data. Oh, my goodness. I think that's about it for this edition of Twitch. Twitch at twit.tv is the email address, at Ryan Schott, at Patrick Norton. And we hope to see you and all of your friends here next week. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Schrout.
And the strange little shot of a window in between that. Next week, what a transition on Twitch. What was that, dude? That was so cool.
That was the show notes.
It's like subliminal.
I'm Patrick Norton. I'm the show notes. I'm Ryan Schrout. Seems accurate.